All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Behind the Glass, a Mincast minisode. I'm Jimmy Byrne. And if you're here because of our last episode, then you know that we just talked to Sal Paradise, a local Twin Cities jazzy rocky band. And yeah, we got pretty in depth with them talking about their new song, Kai's Song. And it was a single that was released in May. And we got really lucky because the engineer producer of that song just happens to be our own Andy Henriksen, who is also a recording engineer for Mincast. So he's here today. Welcome to the show, Andy. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me, I guess. Welcome since to I'm here.
You're on the other side of the mic now. So for those at home, to get to know you a little more, could you give a little backstory on your history here in the Twin Cities and how you got into engineering and production and eventually came to work with Sal Paradise?
It's a lot.
Start at the beginning.
So I moved up here when I was 21. I am from a small town about 3.5 hours away, just cornfields and soybean fields. And I was like, well, I was in a band at the time. I was like, well, I think the only way we're going to get anywhere in the world is to move up to where the music's happening, right?
Right.
So I just moved up here and went to recording school at the Institute of Production and Recording. And I never played with my band again.
Sweet.
So that never happened. The whole reason I moved up here. But then I went to there for like a year and a half and graduated, I think. I never got my diploma, but they said I did, so I don't know.
I'll make you a diploma.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So once I graduated, I got an internship at the Terrarium Recording Studios in Northeast, which is it's one of the best recording studios in Minnesota, I think. It's very high end and has all the fancy microphones and yeah. And I was on, you know, doing that, became their assistant engineer for a year. I did the internship for a year and
Jason Norris
is the owner. Rob Osterlin is the house engineer. And pretty much I learned a lot of things from Rob and just how to run a session, really.
Yeah.
Learned also, I don't know, some cool techniques and whatnot. Met a lot of cool musicians and producers. And then, mark that there. Maybe move that out of there. Did that for a couple of years. Was working like 7 jobs trying to record bands, like record some metal bands that I met and became friends with them. How I met Sal Paradise, though, was living where we're recording right now. And kind of building the studio in this house. And I kind of just moved in with some musicians and friends and some people I didn't really know, really. And right. We just kind of built a studio in our living room.
Yeah.
The main floor of the house is pretty much the whole studio. And that's where you're hearing our voices from right now.
It's a great space. It's been home to Mincast since the beginning.
Since the beginning, man.
For several months.
And Sal Paradise actually used to practice here. Because okay. One of my old roommates was their drummer. And I don't know, then they, like he left the band, the drummer left the band, my roommate. And then I just kind of kept in contact with them and saw them a few times live, and they're like, hey, could we record a single with you?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, definitely. And we kind of knocked it out in one day, And I mix it in a couple, a week and a half, and that's it.
Cool. Awesome. Based on the kind of work you picture yourself doing or want to be doing forever, do you feel the most confident describing yourself as a producer, audio engineer, mix engineer, or something else, and why?
I would say I am more of an audio engineer than a producer. And with that, I kind of throw in the mixing and stuff. I enjoy, I think I like mixing the most. Yeah, I like the tracking as well, though. I like setting up and like getting the microphones perfectly in the right position to capture the best it can be, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I think that's what I enjoy the most.
Yeah.
That and mixing. So
you like seeking out and finding the best tones for the instrument.
Yes.
Like from the recording process.
Right.
So you don't have to adjust it later.
That's kind of, that's kind of the thing I've been trying to go for. Doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes the song tones change as you go.
Right.
When you're recording. So I was like, well, I got to really fuck this shit up.
Yeah.
To make it fit now or something.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I'm always curious to hear what people like to describe themselves as, because, you know, I think the lines are a little bit blurred between all of those different titles. And I think, like, you know, somebody can definitely be a producer, but also an engineer, mix engineer, mastering engineer, whatever, just all under one title. And just like, I just always find it interesting, like, what people feel the most comfortable calling themselves. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's pretty,
pretty cool. It's a wide industry that.
Definitely. Yeah. I definitely associate more with audio engineering. Producing, I can do it, but I don't feel very confident when I do it.
Going into the song, Kai's song by Sal Paradise, overall the vibe of the single is very warm, very summery, which is ironic because, correct me if I'm wrong, but you recorded it over the winter. So could you go a little bit in depth about how you achieved that tonally and creatively?
Yeah, I put some microphones in front of their amps and their drums and the bass, and they pumped out that song.
Yeah.
No, that's a good question. You know, when a band comes in, I like to hear kind of the song first.
Yeah.
And then I'll make adjustments. Like, I think we ran the song a few times with just like their basic settings. And then I think I tweaked like the guitar amps a little bit. And the bass, I just DI'd.
Yeah.
You know, nothing crazy.
Right.
As far as that summer feel, I think that has a lot to do with like the drums.
Okay.
And like kind of that rhythm that they're going for, kind of that surfy thing. And then with the drums, I ended up sampling out the snare and the bass drum a little bit. Yeah, they just layered some samples in there that reminded me more of like a surfy sound, I guess.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it totally does. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess more on that, what were there any bands or songs that inspired the sound you were trying to emulate?
There was. I can't think of what it was now, though.
Sorry.
When I was mixing it, and like especially when I was doing those drums, there is definitely a tone I was going for. Like, I probably searched through like this, like especially a snare drum. There's like a certain snare sound that I was going for, and where that sound came from, I don't know. It's right. somewhere in some music that I've heard at some point.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to go to like that early 60s surf rock sound.
Like the Ventures, Surfaris, stuff
like that. maybe a little Beach Boys.
Okay.
But yeah, like kind of that.
Okay.
Cool. I guess.
Yeah, just kind of a general, more like focusing more on like a genre or like a period of time and like what most people used during that time, like the kind of sound that they had.
Yeah, like what, yeah. And that the snare drum we recorded was a little too, like, snappy.
Yeah.
So I needed something that was had a little more body to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I was searching for.
Cool.
I think I found it.
Yeah, I think so too. Was it hard at all to not only bring yourself but the whole band as well to that warm tropical beach headspace for the recording process while trapped inside with an 18-inch blizzard tormenting the Twin Cities outside?
No, it was
crazy.
It was fine.
Yeah.
I just cranked the heat up, you know?
Yeah. Just give him that space with the temperature adjustment.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. It was, you know, you just go in and do it, and that's just kind of how it came out. Maybe we're all just like, man, sucks outside.
Right. Were there any other obstacles that you found coming up in the recording process, mixing process, anything like that you had to, like, really overcome?
And it was pretty straightforward, you know. Like, we did the whole band at the same time, which involved putting, you know, the amps. One of the amps was down in, like, our basement stairs.
Okay.
You know, because it's a house and there's not, like, the isolation is pretty hard to do. So we had an amp down on the stairs. We had the bass just DI'd, drums, and then we had the Rhodes, which is just DI too. So it was pretty easy to separate. And we did a scratch vocal while we were tracking. It just was straightforward, you know. We did like maybe 6 or 7 takes as a full band.
Yeah.
The bass player couldn't make it till later, so the singer did the bass. And then, you know, we got the bass player showed up about the time we finished the main tracking, so we did the bass, overdubbed the bass, did some guitars that went quickly. Like, everything was pretty quick.
Right.
And then we tripled the vocals, and that was it, yeah.
Cool.
Easy.
So I know you mentioned a little bit, but the single was also recorded pretty differently from the norm in that it was all recorded and mixed right here in your living room home studio setup. So how do you think that, I mean, you talked about it a little bit, but was there anything specifically about recording in a home studio setup that you think positively contributed to the record and like how it came out?
Maybe just the vibe.
Yeah.
Maybe just like, you know, like you're jamming in your living room.
Right.
Other than that, though, not really. I kind of have a problem with the home studio setup because I don't have a control room.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to wear headphones when I'm tracking.
Right.
And I guess that's really like the only thing that bothers me about it.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think I can get really good sounds out of this house.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it's wood floors, the ceilings are 10 foot. Like, I'm really surprised at how good I can get, like, my overheads on the drums to sound in here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just hearing you talk about it, I mean, that sounds like, you know, it's not like a major obstacle, but it sounds like, you know, there's definitely some minor obstacles to overcome. And just like, you know, you're working with a living room, you know, spacious, and you're working with a full house rather than, you know, having a isolated control room at your disposal and all that stuff. So
right.
That's definitely something to overcome. And, you know, I always find it interesting because I have some friends, like, for instance, in Chicago, there's this one guy, Matt, who, like, for the past 15 years or something like that, has been running his whole setup out of, you know, his living room and, like, basically his whole house just, like, running wires down the stairs up into the bathroom. And
yeah.
It's interesting to hear, like, you know, it's interesting to hear the difference between like a song that's recorded in a house and a song that's recorded in, you know, a full scale studio. But it's also like, it's also really like, I think that there's definitely like an admirable aspect to like having that kind of a spacious vibe. And like, I would say, you know, just listening to the record, it definitely contributed to that like warm atmospheric feel of the song. Cool. Which I think is a really good thing.
That's so good,
yeah, man. Props to you for figuring that out.
Yeah, no problem.
So you kind of touched on this a little bit, but what in if you had all the money in the world at your disposal to build a studio with that you would be working full time in every day, are we looking at a big budget 120 channel console with Neumanns everywhere, or do you like the comfort level aspect of your home studio setup?
Oh, if I had all the money in the world?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it would be massive. I want Neumanns for sure.
Yeah.
Just the classical, you know, audio engineer dream mics. I want, I'd want like a good board, not 120 channels. Seems a little excessive. My dream is to have something out like more like, yeah, Neumanns and like all that, the cool gear. The boards, the rooms, like mostly the room would probably be where I'd spend a lot of money on, you know, and like different rooms. Like I like how Pachyderm has like a granite closet.
Yeah.
And like the, just, and there's a like, remember that, what was that?
Electrical audio.
No, yeah, I like that too, with like the different...
The Adobe brick.
Yeah, like walls. That's cool. There's like a studio in Seattle that the Foo Fighters, when they did their little thing where he keeps digging down.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do you remember that episode?
I do, yeah, I don't remember the name though.
I can't either, but I like that idea of just having a lot of different rooms and like textures and other things to work with, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So that'd be really cool. And the other thing I'd do... would just be like have something out in the country, like in the woods or by a river.
Yeah.
Because that would be awesome.
Yeah. Combine your upbringing with your present self.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's really cool. I like that idea. People have to travel miles and miles to record with Andy Henriksen.
I want them to be bored until they get out there.
Yeah.
Like for three or four.
Welcome to my complex and very expensive studio. Thank you for traveling 410 miles out from the city.
Yes. You're wonderful.
Welcome to my space. I'm assuming
every single day.
I'm assuming you would provide like bedding and like, you know.
I'd provide a campground.
Okay, there you go.
With electric, you have to pay for that though.
Outhouse?
I just hand him like a little shovel. There you go. There's some trees back there.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Yeah, no, the idea would be to, if I did something like that, would be like having a guest house or something.
Nice. Yeah, a lodging thing.
A lodging.
That's kind of what Pachyderm has going on too, right?
Yeah, I really like the idea of Pachyderm.
Right, just even more in the country.
Yeah, well, even that, like that is like out in the country. It's cool.
Yeah, I've never been there, so I wouldn't even know, but yeah.
Yeah, it's like 40-minute drive. But it's like you get out there and then it's just down this like country road and then you pull in and it's literally just trees everywhere, like you're surrounded by them.
Right. So who are some of your idols in the engineering production industry that you really look up to, sounds you really like to go for?
It's a good question. I really respect Steve Albini because he's very dedicated to the art of audio engineering.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's very much a purist, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love that aspect of it. But I don't know. I like Butch Vig. I like Rob Osterlin. I like this guy. He's a producer named Fluff Harley. Oh,
nice.
He's a local guy who does a lot of like hard rock stuff around town, but I've been on a few sessions of his and they're a lot of fun. And like, he has some really cool creative ideas.
Yeah.
Which is, I learned a lot from him and being on his sessions.
Right.
Also liked, I met Jack Douglas one time, or for a session here, and he's the guy who did, like, John Lennon, and, like, he found Aerosmith and, like, New York Dolls and stuff, and he had a lot to say. He's kind of like that old man who can't not give advice. Like, sometimes it's like, all right, like, stop talking. Yeah. Stop giving advice, and, right. You know. But it was, he had some fun stories, and he also had some cool philosophies.
Bands and artists?
Bands and artists, man. When I was in high school, I loved Nirvana. I still do.
Got the tat.
That's, yeah, my only tattoo is that smiley face. I've really been listening to everything these days. You know, I've been, you know, when I go driving, I listen to a lot of, like, jazz. It's just, like, the best driving music.
Yeah.
Bad Plus, I'm, like, in love with their Inevitable Western. I love that album.
Cool.
I love Ryan Adams.
Love Ryan Adams. He's
great.
Oh,
man. He makes me so sad. It's so good, though.
What do you think of what he did with Taylor Swift's album?
I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I love everything he does.
I like it better.
Yeah. I like Taylor Swift, though, too.
I like it, too, but I think Ryan Adams did it better.
Yeah. Been listening to some hip-hop, like Kendrick Lamar and some of those. Been kind of getting into, like, the Flatbush Zombies a little bit, which are cool.
So... getting back to Sal Paradise, what gear along the recording process, whether it be microphones, outboard gear, patch bays, plugins, would you say became the most used or essential tools to shaping how the sound of the record turned out?
I think the microphones that I depended on the most are the ones we're talking into right now.
Okay.
They're called the ST6050. They're designed by Alan Sides. He's like Oceanways studio owner, engineer. He's done a bunch of stuff. But he kind of designed it to be like the U47 tube / FET sound is what he was going for. But I think they sound great. I think maybe they're lacking a little bit in the top end, but
yeah. I do too. I mean, we've been using them for me and Dan's voice on the show for a while, so you at home can make your own judgment about this, Mike.
Yeah.
But I like it a lot.
It sounds great on overheads. Like, that's my go-to for overheads now.
Mm-hmm.
And we also did the vocals on the Sal Paradise song, on okay. Kai's song. And I think it sounds fantastic.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's probably the main one.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's all pretty standard, you know, dynamics and, you know, 57s and 58s. And
plugins?
Plugins. I've been using this Focusrite Red 2 EQ on almost all my tracks. It just sounds good. It's very musical. Like, you can, you can, like, boost quite a bit if you need to without it sounding really harsh and, you know, EQ-y.
Yeah.
And then taken away, too, is this very musical. And that's probably the one I use the most on, you know, almost all my mixes at this point.
Nice.
That and I got the Waves... the Waves tape plugin. I can't remember what it's called.
Like a tape saturation thing?
It's like the tape, yeah.
I was going to ask because it definitely sounded like you used tape saturation on it.
Yeah, like I ran the master through tape.
Cool.
Or through the tape plugin.
I'm a big fan of running the master tracks through stuff sometimes.
Yeah, it's fun.
It doesn't work all the time, but when it does, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it worked out pretty good in this track.
So before on Behind the Glass, as you've heard, because you've been recording all of them.
Yes.
We've had a wide range of folks who come on and say that they work better bunching a whole bunch of great players into one room and recording on the go, like 60s style, you know, Phil Spector, Brian Wilson.
Corey Wong.
Yep, exactly. And then we've also had folks who work better recording instruments one at a time, sessions spread out, you know, over a longer period of time to make sure everything's perfect. So where on this spectrum do you fall?
I'm definitely more in the believer of the Corey Wong version. If you can find musicians who are as talented as the ones Corey Wong hangs around and records with, I would always go that direction.
Nice.
But if you can't, or if I'm kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Because I do like to spend time getting sounds.
Right.
You know, I'm an audio engineer. That's what I like to hear.
So we'll put it as you like the Corey Wong approach, but you take the time to make sure the mics are adjusted properly and you're getting the most out of every instrument that you record.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not in the Corey Wong as in like I'm just gonna throw sure. some mics right. on it and I don't care
right.
how they're placed exactly.
So finally, You did sell Paradise. What's next on the horizon for you? Where can people find you, come to you for services of production, recording, etc.? What's going on in your life?
Give me a call if you want some recording done or mixing or producing. I got a few things going. Right now, my friend Zeke Erickson and his friends and stuff, his group, Juniper Douglas, is working on their record here at the studio. And we're moving because we had to move out of this house. They don't like us here. We're moving to the Petting Zoo recording studio with August. Hold on. I can't remember his last name. I just met him a couple weeks ago. But we're moving into a studio for the summer, and then maybe, depending on how that goes, me and this August are going to find another space, open up another studio.
Nice.
But that Juniper Douglas album is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
They've been working on it very hard over the course of the 11 months that we've lived here. And I'm looking forward to mixing that and finishing it up.
Nice.
That's my biggest one. I'm doing some more Sal Paradise, probably in June. And then I got this other band called Herter, H-U-R-T-E-R. Probably going to do an album or an EP with those guys soon.
Cool.
And nice. Some, I don't know, just other things.
Nice.
Whatever pops up. Mincast every 2 weeks.
That's what you got going on.
That's my life.
All right. Email address?
Henriksen, H-E-N-R-I-K-S-E-N, sound, S-O-U-N-D, @gmail.com.
Nice. All right, yeah. If you're in need of recording, mixing, mastering services from Andy Henriksen, the dude, the man, Handy Andy, just give him a call, send him an email, and he'll help you out with everything musically that you need. So, Andy, thank you so much. Glad to have you on this side of the mic for once.
No, it's been good, I think.
Hope it's not the last time.
Thanks for having me.
No worries.
It's been good.
Yeah, it's been good.
And it will continue to be good.
Yeah.
Go Mincast.
Go Mincast. All right, everyone at home, thank you again for tuning in to Behind the Glass, a Mincast minisode. Stay tuned, go and check out some other older episodes if you haven't heard them yet. I will be back in 2 months or something like that with another Behind the Glass with another special guest. So, see ya.
Bye.